Oh, welcome to Friday, and welcome to KOW's Week in Review. I'm Bill Radke. We're going to look back over the last week and figure out what happened and why it happened and what it all means. In my panel this hour, Sherman Alexie, poet, novelist. His new book, a memoir, You Don't Have to Say You Love Me, coming out next month?
June 12th.
Great to have you again. Welcome.
Thank you.
What if I do love you? Is that, would you rather I say it or I don't, or I didn't?
You can say it.
Okay.
Yeah. You can whisper it.
Got it.
We're right back to what we were talking about just a few minutes.
Just a few minutes ago when the mics were open. That voice belongs to John Carlson. No, it's not mornings from 6 to 10 on 570 KVI in Seattle. No, this is the Week in Review, but John Carlson, who's unapologetically American, period.
Yes.
Is on our airwaves
right now.
Hi, John. No hyphens. Phyllis Fletcher, managing editor of the Northwest News Network. Great to see you again. Thank you.
Hi. Yeah, thanks.
And we're live tweeting this show at KUOW. Topic number one from this week, would you feed a lion by hand? What if that lion happened to live in the sea? Still a predator, right? But oh, those big eyes and adorable whiskers. You are so cute, sea lion. I just want to feed you by hand and put my little granddaughter right on the edge of the dock. Yes, I do.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
She's fine. Near Vancouver, British Columbia this week, a sea lion grabbed a six-year-old Canadian girl by the dress and pulled her into the water. Some people said he was attacking her. I thought he just wanted to see if she had more breadcrumbs that she wasn't giving up. But what was the lesson in all of this?
Admire animals from afar.
Mm-hmm.
have your children do same. Anytime there's a combination of kid getting hurt, video and social media, it's just really not great for the parents or anyone. I mean, other than the lesson of, hey, remember, stay far away from the edges of docks because you don't know what's down there. And if you do, why are you on the edge? Don't do it.
The lesson taken by crowds of tourists ever since that happened because they've been on the dock all week feeding sea lions, hopefully looking for that same internet famous sea lion
so
they can do the forbidden thing.
No, stop. Stop immediately. Do not do that. It's terrible.
Yeah, my takeaway, very simple. Wild animals are wild.
Yeah.
And I mean, I do a lot of hiking, a lot of backpacking, occasionally some mountain climbing, and wild animals are wild.
What about crows?
Even
don't feed them?
Big brown-eyed. Now, looking at this, because I watched the video a bunch of times, I think what happened is, you know, they were throwing it the sea lion food, and big brown eyes, the whole, and they put their daughter on the bench facing away from the sea lion, hoping, I'm guessing, to get a picture. You know, with the sea lion in the background.
Could be true.
And the sea lion, you know, leapt out of the water, which I've never seen.
It was amazing.
Leapt out of the water, grabbed her dress, and yanked her in to the water. And, of course, she was back out. Somebody jumped in and fished her out a second later. But, you know, again, I think that's the—so I think the family's been kind of getting a bum rap because I don't think they envisioned anything like that happening. They just wanted to get a picture of her sitting—
Well, the grandfather's kind of also being treated like a hero. Her grandfather jumped in to save her, and I keep saying, oh, the quick thinking, the fast acting grandfather. But isn't that literally the only thing you could do in that microsecond? What grandfather would do anything different but hop into the water immediately? It seems like he's being a little overpraised. I'm not hating on him for putting his daughter on the edge of the dock, because I realized that was very unlikely that a sea lion would leap out of the water.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he did what you would do. Sherman, what's the lesson here?
Well, you know, you can look and look. I think you'd have a very hard time finding Native American injured by animal GIF or video.
Uh-huh. That's not a big internet thing. If I searched that.
No, I would think. Maybe, perhaps, but it'd be some very urban native. It'd be somebody like me now.
Uh-huh.
Maybe you might could find a video of me. I once had to run from a possum.
Oh, dear.
You know, in the Central District that was chasing me. I ran from a possum at 1 in the morning, and the whole time I was running, I kept thinking, I'm running from a possum.
So you're a habituated native? You've come to the city and...
The thing is, if that had happened in earlier eras, that would be my name. My name would be Runs from Possum. I'd have a mocking name forever, and then I'd have to do something brave to earn a new name.
Uh-huh.
So it's really I think, common sense, and then the internet is just going to encourage more behavior like this now. Oh. You're going to see people trying to replicate this so they can get their videos. So
that's crazy.
It's just exponential stupidity.
The little girl, by the way, is not seriously hurt, although she is, I'm not making this up, she's at risk for something I'd never heard of called seal finger. Ugh. And it's an infection that happens when a sea mammal's mouth bacteria get into your skin through a cut. So I assume it's seal finger, because why would your six-year-old hip be cut by a sea lion? But it's typically, you know, you're cut in the finger, and that's what. But she's being treated, and she might be absolutely fine.
Seal finger because you're feeding a wild animal.
Right. That's the usual.
Yeah. And then you get your finger bit. Right. Can we add just a common sense commandments? Can we create one? Don't feed wild animals would probably be number four.
It up from the 11 to actually the number four spot.
Not the 10 commandments, like the 10 common sense.
Okay. Got it.
Like number four, don't feed wild animals.
Right. Or know what you're getting into, because you'll probably feed them with your actual body, which is terrible, which is not what you
I think that still falls under don't feed wild animals.
Right? And, probably. Of course, it's bad for the animal, too.
Yeah.
That's the idea. Yeah, it's not good for the animal that's so adorable.
I mean, it's kind of funny, because like if you look at old Yellowstone National Park publicity brochures, they show rangers feeding the animals, the locals.
I didn't know that.
And of course, that all completely flipped, and now it's everybody stay away, do not feed the animals. Never mind, it's dangerous for you; it's not good for them.
Yes, let's leave it there. The stay away. In fact, the general manager of the Steveston Harbor Authority, the dock where the sea lion attacked the girl, told the CBC the dock is, quote, going to become synonymous with the Jaws theme pretty soon.
Oh no!
So let's hope not. Okay, more of KOW's Week in Review, the top stories of the week coming up. KUOW's Week in Review. John Carlson, Phyllis Fletcher, Sherman Alexie. And this week, President Trump proposed a budget. More money for the military, border security, school vouchers, no cuts to Social Security or Medicare, yes cuts to Medicaid, and others, crop insurance, the EPA, of course, the able-bodied poor, in Trump's view, federal employees' retirement benefits, and of local interest, the Trump budget removes funding for the Linwood Northgate light rail extension. Good news, right, John? Let the locals pay for it?
I understand why the locals are upset, but if you look at this from the perspective of being an American, the way they explained it was, look, if you just voted $55 billion additional dollars for light rail, why are you trying to shake down people in New Mexico, Ohio, and North Carolina for another billion?
Why does the federal government pay for local transit projects?
Clearly,
why is that?
Well, that was, you know, part of an effort to popularize mass transit in the 60s and 70s. Hmm. And that's where that whole started. And it used to have like 90-10 matches for light rail projects.
It was like seed money, because that was considered a good thing, a public good. We're going to get more transit and we need it.
And now the attitude is, with so many demands and a finite amount of money and a $20 trillion debt, if you've got...
Trump doesn't mind the debt. Did you see how the budget pencils out?
Yeah. If you've got room to put dozens of billions of dollars more into light rail, why do you need another billion from the feds?
Yeah. Okay. Any disagreement?
Well, it's interesting because it didn't as a federal government, we decide to pay for freeways in general. So it's like, where's the line? Why do we decide that this isn't part of something like that?
Yeah, it's transportation.
Well, the interstate highway is, of course, part of a network, an interstate network. The feds don't pay for state highways, at least they're not supposed to.
Hmm. Even a leading opponent
city of streets.
Mm-hmm.
It's a metaphorical gesture.
Uh-huh.
The whole budget is a metaphorical gesture. None of this is going to happen. And
it is just a suggestion of a budget.
Yes. Yeah. And this particular move was simply a slap at Seattle, at leftist Seattle. So it's all metaphor. This will never happen. The feds, the government might not fund that money. But in this particular budget, everything is simply
It's a gesture,
a signal.
Theater.
It's a discussion
theater. Bad theater is what it
even,
is.
Even a leading opponent of Sound Transit says, it's too abrupt to yank that Linwood funding. It's the project underway, but the light rail that's further away, Tacoma, Everett, Issaquah, he said, okay, feds, you know, make us pay for it if we want it. The budget also cuts research funding, a lot of which goes to the University of Washington, medical research. Good news, John?
No.
Yeah. Well, wait a minute.
But because I graduated from there.
Oh, okay, got it. Trump's budget also...
It's where the heart bumps into ideological consistency.
You're a fan of the head and the heart.
I'm a fan of the UW.
Okay, well, then I guess it depends where your fandom is. Trump's budget cuts $120 million from what Hanford Nuclear Reservation Energy Department wanted.
That'll be restored.
Yeah, I agree with that.
You think that's coming back?
Yeah, probably. I mean, it's just a perennial political football. I mean, it's this big thing that's going to be billions of dollars to even semi halfway one quarter adequately deal with, and it's just constantly under threat of having it taken away, and then it gets restored kind of quietly.
And then look, Congressman Newhouse got the funding restored.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Better know a district.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Looks good at the town hall. In other Trump news, his revised travel ban got blocked again. You know, Washington State successfully sued to block Trump's first ban, saying it would hurt Washington residents and businesses and universities. But the Ninth Circuit Court was okay with that. This week's judicial defeat did not come from the liberal left coast Ninth Circuit. It was the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals saying the travel ban, quote, speaks with vague words of national security, but in context drips with religious intolerance, animus, and discrimination. So this one's going to the Supreme Court. The executive order doesn't mention religion on its face. Should the Supreme Court look at what it says or what they think motivated it?
Well, I think they should look at existing federal law to see if the president has the authority to do what he's doing. I think he does. Even if I don't think it's a great idea, I think he has the authority to do it. It's interesting. A lot of this is animated by what he was saying during the campaign, you know, Muslim bans, et cetera.
Right.
And that has been the impetus for suggesting what his motive was for the executive orders that were first declared unconstitutional several months ago here in Seattle. But looking forward... on this, you know, some commentators said, you know, if Hillary Clinton had done this, then that would have been constitutional.
Oh, no.
What?
Oh, we're not going to do that, are we? And,
oh, come on, John. Well, that's a lie. You're lying.
No, it was on MSNBC, so it doesn't matter much.
No, the same people, the same leftists aligned against Trump's anti-Muslim ban would have been aligned against Hillary's anti-Muslim ban.
One of the commentators on MSNBC
and the same judges would have ruled against her.
If Hillary had done this, then it would have been different because there wasn't the ideological animus toward Muslims that has been cited with Donald Trump. And my take on that is, you know, wait, that's not what the Constitution says. It's either constitutional for a president to do this or it isn't.
So the motivation shouldn't matter to the U.S. Supreme Court.
The motivation...
Because there's a constitutional court protection against establishing
legally
a
allowed to do
a religion.
Yeah.
You can't establish a religion.
I'm just fascinated that John Carlson is one of the many people now that I know who has this alternate Hillary universe playing out.
Don't we all have this alternate? Well, what if Barack Obama had done that? What if they said this about Hillary Clinton? That's just human. I think liberals and conservatives share the hypocrisy weather vane.
Double standard. That kind
radar.
Of.
Yeah, I think so.
Mm-hmm.
So Trump could ask the Supreme Court to let the travel ban take effect while they're deciding. He could say, for example, look at the, I don't know whether this will fly or not with the Supreme Court, but he could say this is a national security issue. For example, Manchester bomber, naturalized citizen whose parents came from Libya, which is on the banned list. That argument might happen.
It probably will. To be real honest, when you look at his entire national security program, it ain't that big a deal, but it became a huge deal because of how it was rolled out and the controversy and people, you know, running to the airport and trying to keep people. So a huge amount of drama was built up from it. But the policy itself just applying to these six countries for a short period of time while they're, you know,
while they can figure out what the hell is going on. How long will that last?
Again, it's not that big a deal, and there's been so much time and energy and resources exhausted on it.
I think it's a big deal if you're one of the people who was affected by it. If you're one of the people who couldn't get back into the country, if you feel demonized, it's a huge big deal.
Local businesses trying to hire people. I mean, this is according to this Court of Appeals. This is what Washington's Attorney General argued, that it's a big deal to universities and businesses here and residents.
How many people, though, at the U did they actually show were affected by this?
I don't know how many. Enough for the court?
It was like less than 10.
And you're doing, John, exactly what plenty of conservatives are doing, is minimizing the reasons why he's doing it and why he wants to do it and why people voted for him. And it is out of specific racism, specific religious intolerance. And you're falling back on legal, constitutional arguments and not moral arguments. And if our courts aren't going to rule based on morals, then what good are the courts? So you can talk constitutional or unconstitutional, or you can talk immoral or moral. And Trump's anti-Muslim ban is based on immoral reasoning, just as much of his programs are, just as his budget is.
What is immoral about wanting to make it harder for people to get into the country who you think could be a security risk?
Then we should be looking at white Christian fundamentalists who are born here, who have committed far more violence and far more terrorist acts in the last 10 years than Muslims
but
have.
No, they haven't. But they're not. So, and besides, here already. They're here. The question is, when you're...
And then you want to talk about gun control, and then you want to talk about not cutting programs that seek to... have programs that help with these men who might become violent. Really, the ban should be like rental cars. You can't rent a car if you're a male under the age of 25, regardless of where you come
actually,
from.
Actually, it's kind of hard.
It's the profile.
So, exactly. Regardless of religion, regardless of country of birth, regardless of politics, if you're a male under 25, you are, demographically speaking, potentially dangerous.
No, my son is 21. He couldn't rent a car.
There you go.
He couldn't rent a car because he's a young male.
President Trump start talking about the dangers of Christian fundamentalists under the age of 25.
Why? They're not dangerous.
Well, ask everyone who's been shot by one.
Who has?
I don't have my list out, but...
No, who has?
Parishioners in South Carolina.
But that wasn't done in the name of Christianity. That was done in the name of racism. Big difference. What happened in Manchester was done in the name of religion.
Confederacy is religion. Done under the name of the Confederate flag is religion. Is religion. It's religiosity.
Okay, whether there's a tie between Christianity and racism is going to be the subject of a year-long discussion. We're just going to have all of you and other guests just camp out. We're going to put sleeping bags in the corner, and we'll just have it out for a year straight on
KOW. No, it's not a connection between Christianity and racism. It's a connection between fundamentalism and racism. Fundamentalism of any variety.
Okay.
And what Christian conservatives love to do is pretend that their fundamentalism is somehow different than other religions' fundamentalism, and it's not. It's all the same.
And it's not all the same. I mean, I'm sorry. We don't see the Jewish equivalent of Al-Qaeda. We don't see the Mormon equivalent of Al-Shaddad.
We don't. Millions and millions and millions of people were enslaved and murdered in the United States for religious reasons. Millions and millions and millions of Native Americans were murdered, raped, abused by religious people in the name of Christianity. We haven't had it recently,
but it's a part of our very foundation.
It's a part of our very foundation as this country is the Christian fundamentalist violence.
Okay, I appreciate the discussion. I truly do. I also, in the interest of this being not just the millennia in review, but more specifically, though I love the discussion. And hopefully that's starting conversations among our listeners that we will continue and you'll continue. I just keeping on this week's news. I'm curious what you all think of the development of, ever since Trump has come to office, liberals have been pointing to various congressional elections and saying, look, Trump is hurting his party because Republicans are almost losing. And last night, a Montana Republican won to the Congress. He won the election right after body slamming a reporter. The reporter from The Guardian came into the room uninvited and asked Gianforte about the Congressional Budget Office estimate that the Republican health bill will cost 24 million people their health insurance.
Into the CBO score, because you know you were waiting to make your decision about health care until you saw the bill and it just came out. And what
we'll talk
it.
To you about that later.
Yeah, but there's not going to be time. I'm just curious if you have the
speak
right
with
now.
Shane, please.
But you don't.
Sick and tired of you guys. The last time you came here, you did the same thing. Get the hell out of here. Get the hell out of here. The last guy did the same thing. You were the Guardian?
Yes, and you just broke my glasses.
The last guy did the same damn thing.
You just body slammed me and broke my glasses.
Get the hell out of here.
You'd like me to get the hot up here, I'd also like to call the police. Can I get you guys' names?
Hey, you gotta leave.
He just body slammed me.
You gotta leave.
Greg Gianforte did apologize, but only after he won the election.
That's not the person that I am, and it's not the way I'll lead in this state. Rest assured, our work is just beginning, but it does begin with me taking responsibility for my own actions.
Phyllis, as an editor, you looked uncomfortable during the airing of the...
As an editor and a nerd and a person with glasses, seeing people getting beaten up is very difficult for me. Hearing it is even difficult. And as someone who supervises staff who've been attacked by people who they have the responsibility to interview and the right to interview, it's very hard to listen to that. That's crazy. At the same time, I knew there's no way it would change the opinion of his supporters, because I think wherever you are with your political beliefs, something like that probably isn't going to change your allegiance. And most of the votes had already come in anyway. But unfortunately, for a lot of reasons, I think that reporters don't have the best reputation in our society, and it can be fun to kind of say we're all jerks or whatever. But this has happened to people I work with every day, and I really resent
what?
It.
Every day people get body slammed?
No, people I work with every day.
Yes,
this has happened to
this
them.
What's happened to?
I looked back to see if my staff member had tweeted about this, and they hadn't. So I'm not going to disclose their identity. But they've been shoved, and if they had worn glasses, they would have broken. Mm-hmm. Yep. So this is crazy.
What's the lesson?
You guys are nerds. You wear glasses. You want somebody shoving you?
Three out of the four of us are wearing glasses.
When you're
right
doing
now.
Your
well,
job?
Well, he's a bully, and he certainly wouldn't shove somebody my size.
Right.
Mm-hmm. He wouldn't shove somebody with my muscle mass or my height. So a total bully. And the thing is, what's happening is this moral decay. I grew up in red state America. I grew up in the two most conservative counties in Washington state. I grew up with the Future Farmers of America. I grew up with 4-H. I grew up surrounded by Christian conservatives. I grew up on basketball teams. I grew up with many, many, many white conservative institutions, and they always preached and practiced nonviolence. So this move by this guy and the support he's getting, explicit and implicit, is actually un-Christian, unconservative, and un-American.
John, unconservative? Start there.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, I think there's a lot of violence happening in the name of politics for the last several years, you know, and it started on college campuses. It's gotten worse on college campuses. You have a professor at Evergreen State College who was just literally driven off campus by activists there. You've seen it in political campaigns. This guy's so clearly out of line. But I'll tell you my takeaway in looking at the issue, not so much the bullying episode, because you guys covered it very well, but it's very interesting. The Democratic Party is in some serious trouble here. This guy, Greg Gianforte, ran for governor back in November. And he ran as an establishment Republican, a business Republican. That's he got his money from high tech.
He wasn't even that kind to Trump when
and
he ran.
No, he distanced himself from Trump. And Trump wins Montana by 21 points. He loses the governorship. He lost that race by 4 points. Mm-hmm. It is 6 months later. he embraces Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
He runs an, by all accounts, imperfect campaign against a Democrat who's a very popular folk singer in Montana and had $6 million spent by him and on his behalf. And he wins by, I think, like 8 percentage points.
Yeah, but
even after doing
Quist
something
had,
like this,
it wasn't a perfect Democratic candidate. I mean,
no.
He had like tax problems, and he had—I right, don't know right. that much about the guy.
But the fact that this guy loses a statewide race by 4 points, and 6 months later, after doing something like this on election eve and losing the endorsement of Montana's three biggest newspapers on the spot, he wins going away. Shows that the Democratic Party, which has been badly in search of a victory somewhere, anywhere, you know, a mayor's race in Nebraska, can we win that one? No, they can't. They're in trouble. In California, a huge split at their state convention.
Okay. So you think the anti-Democratic backlash or anti-Trump backlash is not real, not materializing.
It's not materializing in the form of Democratic victory.
Yeah.
Spin, spin, spin.
You don't need to spin when you win.
The dude got 68% of Trump's vote, and Quist got 94% of Hillary's vote. And an 8% win in Montana for a GOP candidate is really low.
He lost 6 months ago.
So, no, that's a spin, John.
No, he lost 6 months ago, a statewide race in Montana.
The numbers are showing overall the closeness of these races that in swing districts, in swing states, it's looking right now, according to a few sites, statistical models, that the Democrats have about a 14% advantage in swing states and swing districts.
So,
this is not unnatural to have a midterm election right? swing big. It's completely predictable, and it's going to happen regardless. And I think it's going to be really big.
Okay, we're all reading the writing on the wall differently, and we'll see what actually happens when the non-special elections come up. KUOW's Week in Review continuing with how Seattle treats its many, 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 many newcomers. And is it okay or should it be illegal to conceal your identity while protesting? Coming up. KUOW's Week in Review. And on Twitter, Rick says, can we talk about how delightful the news quiz was?
Aw.
Thanks, Rick. KUOW did a little news quiz, actually a big sellout the Neptune Theater news quiz on Wednesday, and we just had a fantastic time. Thanks largely to Sherman Alexie, one of our celebrity panelists.
Oh,
you have fun, Sherman?
Yeah, it was great fun. Luke Burbank, Lindy West, Ken Jennings, and you. It was very fun. It was a good crowd of very adept improvisers.
The kind of news quiz where we end up discussing whether couples actually secretly want to sleep separately.
Well, that was
point. That was your surprise contribution. I appreciated that.
Well, that's the thing is, I am no psychologist or therapist, but I guarantee you every marriage in the United States would be better if the spouses slept separately.
Get that from Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Yeah.
Just try.
And right now, 2/3 of your listeners are silently agreeing, but they can't say anything because one of the partners needs to be to sleep with their spouse and their partner. And the thing is, no. And then the thing is, that turns the bed into a sacred place.
Mm.
So that if you're in bed together, that means it's time for magic.
That, let's do another news quiz. So, shall we do that soon?
It's like a lot of what Sherman says. It doesn't occur to you until you hear him say it, and all of a sudden it makes perfect sense.
Yes, that's right. Poet, novelist, and marriage counselor Sherman Alexie, the John Carlson Show from KVI. John is here. Phyllis Fletcher from the Northwest News Network, and we're wrapping up the week in review. So one of the big stories this week was a number. We know that Seattle is growing, but this number puts it in perspective. This week, the U.S. Census Bureau put out some new data, and Seattle is America's fastest growing big city by percentage. And we just tripped the odometer. We're now at 700,000 people. How does Seattle welcome these new arrivals? Yesterday on this show, I asked Monica Guzman about this. She's the founder of the Evergrey. And some newcomers had told her, they put together a video, that they feel like they're never going to have been here long enough. They'll never be considered locals here.
I sort of wonder if you can ever really gain local status. I know I've been chasing it for a while.
Honestly, I think you have to be born here. That's what I have figured out, despite circles of friends that I have managed to be weasel my way into that are locals, and I'm the one outsider.
You will always be an outsider. That theme was echoed on our Facebook page, too, where newcomer Whitney writes, I'm surprised at how much some people fear change and growth. I guess I'd hope that a progressive city would have more people that embrace change. We newcomers are not the enemy, says Whitney. And this is an irony, arguably, I'm curious what you think, an irony of Seattle that we think that we're open-minded and that we adore immigrants, but actually we're xenophobes. True or false? Phyllis, you were born and raised here. You can speak for all locals. Are we xenophobic?
I don't know. I mean, even when I was a little kid, I was always way more outgoing than my friends.
Mm-hmm.
And so I might be an atypical Seattleite in that regard. I don't know, because I can't deny it's a real thing when I have friends who've moved here from elsewhere. They always say, I've lived this place, that place. It's never been more hard to make friends than this city. I have so many friends who've said that. But I don't feel like I'm that way. So I don't know. But, you know, they say it's a real thing. So, and we're all from somewhere, right? Except for maybe Sherman's kin, right? We're all from somewhere. We're all interlopers.
Where to begin?
The only people who get to seriously complain about new people in Seattle are coastal Salish indigenous people. Mm-hmm. Everybody else is just being a jerk.
Everybody else, shut up.
Where did you drop the needle on immigration?
The thing is, it is true. I mean, if you were a progressive, you believe in density. Mm-hmm. If you are a progressive, you believe in all the international folks coming in to work in all the tech companies, bringing in all these other cultures and ideas. Mm-hmm. If you're a real progressive, you realize that it's a bunch of liberals moving in. I think it's incredibly foolish. And I've never bought the unfriendly Seattle thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Ever.
But people have said that to you, right?
Yeah, all the time. And granted, for 10 or 12 years now, I get recognized a lot. So people are friendly to me anyway. But even when people don't recognize me, you know, the easiest way to receive friendliness is to be friendly.
Mm-hmm.
It's an amazing relationship between kindness received and kindness given.
Well, then it's a friendly to the chicken, friendly to the egg question, because how can you get friendly if you're not going to be friendly?
Be the chicken and be the egg.
Aww.
Got it.
Well, what about you, John? Where are you from again?
I grew up in West Seattle.
Okay, that's what I thought.
I grew up in West Seattle when its selling point is that a working class family could still get a water view home on a working class salary.
Mm-hmm. So you have all kinds of friends now. Do they say, how come you won't ever have coffee with me? What's up with that?
No, I think the big difference is if you compare Seattle to other cities, of course it's a friendly city. But if you compare Seattle to what it used to be, Seattle used to have a catchphrase. The catchphrase was Seattle nice.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that?
That's turned into a diss.
Because people used to have like a small town friendliness, even though make eye contact with people on the sidewalk, even though they were in an emerging large city, a city that was growing and coming into its own. Now the catchphrase isn't Seattle nice, it's the Seattle freeze.
Right. Yeah.
And that there is no hostility, no unfriendliness, just kind of a sense of aloofness, a sense of more people kind of keeping to themselves.
Do you think that's the newcomers or the old comers reacting to all the newcomers, or what's going on?
I think it's a mix of people who have been here for a few years reacting to those who are moving in. But it's interesting. You know, when you're walking on the sidewalk and you just see people interacting more cautiously than they used to. People are much more on their guard in Seattle than I remember them being 30, 40 years ago.
And here I get to say in public for the first time on the air about the Queen Anne reaction to, grandmother,
mother-in-law houses?
Mother-in-law houses, how they voted against it and stopped it. Mm. Bad, bad, bad. That's a hill of bad liberals. Queen Anne, you're a neighborhood of horrible, hypocritical liberals.
Wow. Our Twitter, our computer just exploded. Right. We're not going to be able to see what Twitter says about that. That's too bad. That's a lost opportunity.
As Queen Anne goes, so goes Magnolia. Be careful there.
Is anyone going to defend the I happen to be I said the other day on the air that I think if you're bothered by the new people and feel you have higher status and they're of lower status, you might have a window into the anti-immigrant voter. But now I feel like I would like somebody to step up and defend the longtime Seattleites who would just soon keep it the way they loved it. And that's why they came here.
Well, I think there's some anxiety about how quickly so much of the old is simply washing away.
Yeah, well,
it's the pace.
That's a national conversation, happening. Right? Yeah. Things are changing. Make America great again. Is that connected? We don't like change. We don't like everybody can make an other out of somebody, right? Mel Brooks said the very first national anthem was "Let them all go to hell except for Cave 72."
Right? Okay.
No matter who you are,
I do get scared about wanting to protect life for poor people here because that's how I grew up, and I feel like that is the way I grew up is so impossible here now. I don't see how it could happen. My mom came here as a teenager, went to UW. A few years later, she was a single mom. She doesn't drive, so she needs to live near public transportation. Try that now. Try being a poor person in Fremont now. By the way, if you're trying that, I would love to know how you're doing it because it seems really difficult.
Right.
Very challenging. I don't see how it happens now.
Well, one of the positive things in that regard I've seen is at 23rd and Union with their development there.
The development,
they're having hundreds of low-income housing apartments at 23rd and Union, which is the center of gentrification of the Central District. And now it looks like this partnership between neighborhood folks and developers is resulting in something liberal and progressive.
Yeah.
Imagine that.
Right, right.
In a liberal and progressive city, building housing in a liberal and progressive way.
Right.
Okay, on our Facebook page, one more comment from Liberty, who says, "I moved here 1 year ago from Los Angeles. I can't get used to the fact that people park their cars on residential streets in the wrong direction. I don't get it." So at least not all concerns have equal gravity. Liberty's just got to get used to other way parking.
Somebody named Liberty is complaining about how people park their cars.
Yeah,
that's hilarious.
All right, KOW's Week in Review: a possible ban on demonstrators wearing masks and hoods, and other stuff coming up on the Week in Review. Stay tuned. Okay, we've got our computer system back up. We were able to do a workaround after Sherman said that all of Queen Anne is a hill full of bad liberals. We were able to rewire things, and the fire department has come in and cleared the smoke, and so we're back in broadcasting again.
Yeah, the 17 conservatives there said, "Sherman tells the truth."
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah, there
17,
it is.
More like seven.
Sherman Alexie and John Carlson and Phyllis Fletcher. The next question, should we as a state allow protesters to wear masks or hoods? A Republican state legislator says nope. Under the bill introduced by Senator Jim Honeyford of Sunnyside, protesters wearing masks or hoods during demonstrations could be charged with a crime. And Honeyford says he is not targeting demonstrators.
Well, I would call them rioters that wear masks. And you look at why do they wear a mask? So they conceal their identity and get away with their violent acts.
Violent acts. Except violent acts are already illegal, Phyllis. Isn't this bill just about the clothing, even before the violent act?
Yeah, it is. And he has a bunch of exceptions that he's listed for it. So covering your face for religious reasons.
That's okay.
Okay. Mm-hmm. If you're a skier, snowboarder, doing some kind of sport, covering up for the weather, that would be okay. If you're going to a fancy masquerade ball or if you're celebrating Mardi Gras, that would be okay.
That's all right.
If you are using a mask for work, that would be okay. Mm-hmm. And if you're covering up as part of a quote-unquote traditional holiday costume, that would all be okay.
Halloween's covered.
What if the holiday is May Day and you're in the traditional rioting costume?
So what that means is that
you're on the bubble, I guess.
So everybody should wear a Halloween mask when they're protesting.
Yeah, Scooby-Doo mask.
I mean, this is the emptiest of political gestures.
You think it's a little better know a district? Good for my district.
It's political masturbation for his voters.
The ACLU of Washington says you can't do that.
I know
it's
the
unconstitutional.
Senator in question. That's a terrible visual. Anyway, look,
that's a good point. Sorry, John. God.
But I'm also thinking about, you know, the origin of these laws. These are state statutes, of course.
Yeah, North Dakota has one.
Down south, they started passing these laws in the 40s and 50s as a way of making it less comfortable for the Ku Klux Klan to intimidate people.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at, you know, some of the states that have this law and some of the states that don't, and I assumed it was going to more or less break down among a red-blue divide. And it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, New York City, I think, has the most stringent. New York City. New York State has the most stringent of these laws, and they use it.
Mm-hmm.
So do they? I don't know about New York. I don't know if you do either. I know North Dakota makes it illegal to wear a mask while committing a crime, you know, which sounds more constitutional.
That's
you could
what
add
California
on.
Now.
It's like an aggravated factor. Mm-hmm. But do you know whether other states just have a blanket no being angry with a hood?
New York's is they passed theirs in the 1840s.
Oh,
and you can't wear a mask or a disguise out in public, and they have some exceptions of the type that Phyllis was just ticking off, you know, that are in Huntingford's bill.
Mm-hmm.
But again, they use it they used it during the Occupy demonstrations.
Hmm.
It was very interesting. You had a side-by-side at Berkeley. You had a bunch of masked protesters who were busting things up.
Mm-hmm.
And at Auburn University in Alabama, when they showed up, police ordered them, take off your masks. And when they didn't, the police took them off.
Mm.
Guess which campus didn't get busted up?
Uh-huh.
Mm.
So
well, you're a First Amendment kind of, do you have libertarian blood in you? Is there any part of you that says, heck no, this is big government trampling on my rights? I mean, we vote in private. We, you know, you can't you express yourself without unmasking yourself? Before any violent action,
I would favor a version of this law. I don't want to make it easy or convenient for people whose sole aim is to intimidate others and throw things at police officers and bust up people's property.
But what if that's not their sole aim? What if their sole aim is to demonstrate in public? You know, rally, be mad, raise your fist, shout in a mask, but you're not rock throwing.
Okay, why would you be wanting to express yourself without showing yourself?
Well, maybe your boss would sweat you about it. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I don't know.
In most of the country, you can still be fired for your politics.
Mm.
Yeah, no, that's true, including here.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Including Seattle.
How does that work?
Yeah.
You can fire someone if you don't like their political beliefs.
Really?
Yeah.
My duties would be reassigned if I expressed my
Well, that's true. I mean, yeah, I'm under that.
True.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But how else would that work? Is it expression? Like somebody posts a rant on Facebook and you can fire them, or just I know you to vote with this party and you're fired. You're at what's it, at will?
But it goes beyond that. I mean, for instance, if you were to walk into a printing shop and say, you know, would you please print these wedding announcements for me and my lover, and your lovers of the same gender,
mm-hmm.
you have to do it or you're going to be in trouble with the law. You know, ditto, of course, when it comes to race and ethnicity. But if you were to come, would you print these flyers for our, you know, Republican rally? Sorry, we're Democrats here. Then find, you know, take your business elsewhere.
Uh-huh.
That's how the law reads.
Wasn't there a woman, I don't remember the end result of the case, that got fired because she was too attractive?
That's happened to me more than once. I had a nickel.
And I think actually she lost the court case as much as I can recall. So there's all sorts of reasons you can be fired.
Mm-hmm.
So there's all sorts of reasons why you might want to wear a mask and be a nonviolent protester.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Honeyford says, the senator says his bill would protect the public from, quote, organized groups whose members wear masks while committing criminal acts under the guise of political speech. Okay, so maybe he is making that link.
No, I think Jim is on the right track. You know, and obviously when you drop a bill, you're starting a discussion,
mm-hmm.
and the bill might, you know, be amended and changed. But I don't have a problem with the central thrust of what he wants to do here.
Alex on Facebook, Alex in Seattle says, I participated in a protest at the Church of Scientology. That group's got a long history of suing and harassing those who oppose it, so I chose to wear a mask to protect my identity.
Mm-hmm.
Protesters of all sorts face the potential of retaliation. To not allow the option to protect one's privacy will have a chilling effect on free speech. True?
I think so. I'm surprised to learn from you, John, about how many states have these laws, and I'm surprised their constitutionality hasn't been tested and the laws overturned. I'm really surprised that that's
Yeah,
impossible.
it runs the gamut. There are blue states with these laws. There are red states without these laws.
Yeah.
Okay.
It all goes back to the power of the corporation over its workers.
Mm-hmm.
And it all goes, that's the root cause of all of these laws, is the power of a corporation over its workers. It's 19th century robber baron serfdom stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We love, thank you for writing to us, by the way, Alex and everybody else who's weighing in. We love when you join in, so you can call us, 206-221-3663, 221-3663. Our email is record@kuow.org, and Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, you know, we spend a lot of time on our phones. Okay, a little music now. This is the Week in Review. The funeral for Chris Cornell is happening today. The Soundgarden singer-songwriter, frontman, born and raised in Seattle, is being buried in Los Angeles. He died last week. The coroner said he hanged himself, but we don't have the full report yet. Lots of people remembering Chris Cornell in the past days. The song Black Hole Sun, you know, inspired by the sculpture at Volunteer Park. This is Norah Jones, just one of the artists performing Chris Cornell's music in tribute this week.
In my shoes, walking straight.
Managing editor of the Northwest News Network is Phyllis Fletcher. From KVI, John Carlson, novelist, poet Sherman Alexie, and you on the Week in Review. Finally, Seattle City Council member Shama Sawant has written a letter to the Seahawks coach Pete Carroll and the owner Paul Allen, encouraging them to sign San Francisco quarterback Colin Kaepernick, and she might get her wish. The Seattle Times reports that Kaepernick came to Seattle this week to talk about being a possible backup to quarterback Russell Wilson. This goes beyond sports. This is about how politics and sports mix, because Kaepernick is famous, for example, for kneeling during the national anthem to call attention to how African Americans are treated in this country. And Seattle has spent years thinking of Colin Kaepernick as the bad guy because he's with our rival San Francisco. Phyllis, do you want Colin Kaepernick to be a Seahawk?
Yeah, I have to say, I'm such a sports dilettante, but all the ancillary stuff is always so interesting to me that I'm a total fair weather fan. But yeah, I would find it really interesting to watch this. Plus, he's cool because he looks like Squidward. I put that in the positive.
Like who? Sorry.
Squidward from SpongeBob.
Oh, Squidward.
He looks like that guy. So I would like to watch that. Yeah.
Okay. So the star, Michael Bennett from the Seahawks, says Seattle's the perfect place for Kaepernick.
Oh.
Well, I've been trying to find out who Shama Sawant thinks can help strengthen the Mariners' bullpen. had some challenges.
I bet it's a lefty. I don't have that confirmed.
That's right.
No. I'm back to a more basic question. Why is the socialist interested in the most capitalistic business in the country?
Let Councilmember Sawant speak for herself. In this letter to Pete Carroll and Paul Allen, she says, quote, "I am not a football expert, but everything I have read strongly suggests that the only reason a player with Kaepernick's skills is still a free agent is because of the backlash against his courageous leadership last year against racism, brutality, and discrimination. If that makes other teams wary of signing him, shame on them. In Seattle, we know our communities will only benefit from his activism as well as his talents on the field." And that's what I mean when Michael Bennett says the thing is, sports teams are never as local as I want them to be. The players aren't from here. The coaches aren't from here. There's not a Seattle way to play football. But with liberal politics, Colin Kaepernick would actually be Seattle-ish, right? If you want your hometown team to represent you in any way, isn't Michael Bennett right that he'd love him or hate him, he would be a perfect Seahawk?
I think that without politics, Colin Kaepernick would still be the starting quarterback for the San Francisco 49ers. If you look at the trajectory of his life,
That's what Sean Sawant says.
He got very involved with a woman who's a political, very strong political activist, very strong left-wing commitments, and he was taken very much with her and with her beliefs, and it kind of transformed him. But it also pulled him away from football. Any pro athlete will tell you, you've got to be focused, 100% directed on the game. And clearly, he has been distracted for the last two or three seasons. And this is a reason why I wouldn't want him on the Seahawks, not because of his politics, but because he's not the player he was.
He would just be a backup. What a come down. To back up Russell Wilson. that's Seahawks. We'll watch Kaepernick, whether he actually comes here. One little more item. Jeff Bezos from Amazon was at the Museum of Flight a few days ago telling school kids his vision for a human settlement on the moon. And, he's got his space exploration company, Blue Origin. And according to GeekWire, Bezos said that, I want to see millions of people living and working in space. Living and working, that's the vision.
He wants to see it from where? From Earth?
No, he just looks at, rest of us look at the moon and compose poetry, right?
Right.
And we think of our lovers. Uh-huh. Bezos looks at the moon and thinks, warehouse space.
As I said, he's got a fulfillment center up there right now, or a warehouse up there right now.
I mean, talk about naked capitalism, profane, pornographic capitalism.
Well, he says we're going to have to take advantage of the resources beyond Earth. So we got to mine that sucker.
Profane capitalism.
You're going to need it. Okay.
I'm an atheist. Uh-huh. And looking up into the night sky makes me believe in God.
and quick delivery, overnight delivery. That is Sherman Alexie and Phyllis Fletcher and John Carlson. Sherman's new memoir, You Don't Have to Say You Love Me, is almost out. John Carlson, KVI in the mornings, Phyllis Fletcher, Northwest News Network, and I'm Bill Radke. Thanks for being part of the Week in Review team.
We just got started.
Right?
Yeah, I know. Let's do another hour. Come on. Hot mic.
Back at you next week.